Hello and welcome to another edition of the Ice World podcast with me, marine biologist Nadia Frontier, featuring conversations that I recorded in Antarctica and sub-Antarctica whilst working with the British Antarctic Survey. This time I'm speaking to fellow marine biologist and colleague Katie Wells, who you will have heard previously in the midwinter episode discussing the science that she was conducting and continues to lead at King Edward Point Research Station on South Georgia at 54 degrees of southerly latitude. We discussed the monitoring of pelagic life with a focus on krill, and I promised her that we would go into more depth with this dedicated episode. We recorded this together in our shared office back in June 2024. Katie signed up for an epic 24-month contract, and I wanted to talk to her in more detail about her background, spending so much time in sub-Antarctica at once, and what it's like to conduct year-round marine and zoological science in South Georgia across not one, but 2 years.
I'm Katie. I'm one of two marine biologists based at King Edward Point in South Georgia. I don't know how I've quite found myself into island work, but I started off on Ascension Island, which is a very hot and dry environment near the equator. And I was monitoring green turtles there. So that feels very different to where I am right now. But I found that on islands, you find lots of species that you don't find anywhere else just because of their isolation. So you get lots of endemic plants and animals, which is what kept me going in that field, I guess. I ended up on Gough Island, which is 40 degrees south in the middle of the South Atlantic Ocean, 200 miles from the nearest land, which is Tristan da Cunha, which is an equally remote island.
Yeah, that's not even.
As well as all of the interesting animals and plants there, it kind of got me used to remote working with a small set of colleagues, which is quite a nice atmosphere, really. You get quite a self-sustaining feel to it, which I think probably attracted me to keep going with this.
How long did you spend on Gough?
I was there for a year as part of an RSPB project, but I was mostly working with birds there.
Of course, less polar and extreme being at 40 degrees south, but still.
Think rain on Gough. Less snow, more rain. But that makes quite a magical environment because it's so lush and green and you have lots of ferns and phylica trees.
So did you have any apprehensions about accepting a 24-month contract? You've gone from 12 months away being your longest stint to now 2 years.
Yeah, for sure. I think my longest before this was a year, so I was definitely a little bit daunted by it. But actually, I found that with so much going on, either through work or socially, time is absolutely flying past. Already over a quarter of the way through that contract, which is ridiculous. I think also an advantage of doing 2 years is that I'm already excited to see the seasons again, like having seen what I already have. I know what's coming and I know what to look forward to next year. So that's quite exciting.
Really, really exciting. What skills did you need to apply for this position?
Well, the job at KP is very varied as a marine biologist job goes. In the summer, you're doing a lot of field work, a lot of hiking to remote sites. But then in the winter, you might do a bit more lab work and you do some work from a research vessel as well. So yeah, that can vary from analysing fur seal scat to taking magnetic readings for the British Geological Survey through to looking at giant petrel chicks and checking that they've fledged on time. So yeah, I guess ultimately you need organisation as a key skill, yes. Being able to juggle all of that and fit it in around the weather as well. Organisation and a willingness to learn new things as well, because nobody can come into this job knowing how to do all of those things perfectly.
Is there a specific skill you were excited to learn when taking on this job?
Yeah, having come from more of a bird background, I was really interested in the fisheries science. So learning about the diversity of krill as well as plankton that you get down here is really interesting.
And that was the first time that you've seen krill and got to actually sample pelagic life, so life that's in the open ocean, microscopic mostly.
Yeah, I'd never worked from a research vessel before, so that was a huge learning curve. but really fun and really interesting.
How did you feel when you sailed from the Falkland Islands for 4 days and saw King Edward Point for the first time?
So we actually arrived at night time, and I remember, so we were anchored in Cumberland Bay, which is where King Edward Point is. I remember opening my curtain in my cabin at dawn the next day and just seeing the little red roofs of KEP. And I'd seen so many pictures of it before, but I'd never be able to prepare myself for like how beautiful it is here. So KEP is kind of nestled in a colosseum of snow-capped mountains with glaciers. And yeah, and it happened to be one of those rare blue sky days that we actually landed at KEP. As our boat approached the wharf, there were huge male elephant seals having battles. It was literally like walking into a documentary. It was crazy.
It must be absolutely surreal knowing that you're actually going to be there for 2 years and that's it. That's your life now.
Yeah. It was absolutely surreal.
What's the structure of the science team at King Edward Point? How does it work?
So I'm one of two marine biologists and we both share the roles. So we have exactly the same job, which is definitely necessary, especially in summer, because you have something to see around where you're off hiking every other day. But you're also juggling things like monitoring the giant petrels and doing all of the work from the vessel as well. So having two people allows you to share those responsibilities a bit. Yeah, and the rest of the team at KEP are a mixture of roles like doctor and station leader, techs and boaties, all of which help to support the running of the station.
And then in the summer, so when we move away from the small winter team, you then have an influx of different science personnel.
Yeah, and then it's really exciting over the summer. We get a variety of different projects through, and they're less long-term monitoring. They're more externally funded or BAS-funded projects that happen just over the summer. So this last season, we had the Hungry Humpbacks project, which was an incredible team of specialists studying humpback whales in South Georgia waters.
Okay. So let's work in a seasonal cycle. You arrived to South Georgia in November at the height of summer. What projects were you first plunged into?
Well, in the first couple of days, I was off on my first fur seal round. So in November, the fur seals return to land. First, the males come onto the beaches and set up territories. And they're closely followed by the females, which start having their pups. So very quickly, the beaches get incredibly busy and noisy. But part of my role is to go to 8 sites and take photographs of study beaches every 2 days so that we can monitor the assemblage of males, females and pups over the breeding season. It's actually a joy. It's essentially a 6-hour walk.
Wow.
Which is what I would be doing if I was back home anyway, just without the seals. So it's joyous. But then also in the summer, you're studying populations of giant petrels, monitoring nests throughout the season, Gentoo penguins. We also have acoustic monitors out in the field to study the South Georgia pipit, which is the world's most southerly songbird.
And sound amazing.
Yeah, they have a lovely singing voice as well.
What are the fur seal pups like? How do they look when they're right outside your window and on the beaches?
Well, they start off very, very, very cute. They're small, black and fluffy. And they have huge eyes and they make little sounds that kind of remind me of a sheep sometimes. but they grow quite quickly and their fur becomes more silvery and sleek as they get ready to go out to sea.
Wow. Does it stop you sleeping at night sometimes having this cacophony of wildlife right outside your window?
It is noisy, especially when the female fur seals come back onto land after feeding at sea. They're looking to locate their own pup, so they're just calling and calling, and then there are pups calling back hoping that she'll come to them.
It must be so special. So in addition to monitoring marine mammals and birds, you also conduct routine monitoring of the pelagic life. So that's life in the water column. What does that involve?
Pelagic life is anything occupying the water column out at sea. We do a lot of monitoring just in our locality in Cumberland Bay, which is where King Edward Point is. So we take a small plankton sample once a month, and this contributes to the long-term monitoring in the region. In that sample, we find a huge variety of things. So if we're lucky, we might see some Antarctic krill, but we also get a variety of amphipods, things like arrowworms, larval fish, and eggs from fish as well, which drift in the water column as well. But then every 2 months, we head out to the Eastern Core Box, which is a set of transects north of KEP. We are on a research vessel which has an echo sounder fitted to it, and this can monitor swarms of krill on those transects, which we run, but we also, in conjunction, will be up on the bridge looking for cetaceans.
That's very, very varied. I like that spin also from you walking 6 hours a day every other day in the summer to then being on a research vessel and doing more lab-based work. Very different. So the winter comes and the snow coats the tussock grass and there's still some residents, but nothing compared to the summer abundances we were talking about. What's that change like?
I feel like it happened all at once and really slowly at the same time. Probably the biggest change or the turn of the season for me was seeing the giant petrel chicks fledging, because they were just eggs or just two adults on a nest when I first arrived. So seeing them all the way through the summer season and then eventually gliding off into the big world, that was the sort of change to winter for me. Obviously, we've already spoken about how noisy the beaches were. So the biggest change with winter would be how quiet it is now, being able to fall asleep to just the sound of the waves rather than trumpeting king penguins outside the window. A lot more reliant on things like snowshoes and skis to get about.
Yeah, you can't really walk to these sites that you went to in the summer anymore. For example, if you need to change some batteries or some SD cards and some of the monitoring cameras.
It's now a huge mission.
Yeah, it takes even longer walking on snowshoes. So what other winter-based projects happen via this research ship support that you mentioned?
Yeah, given the importance of this marine environment, we do get quite a few projects coming through KEP. So a big example would be the Winter Krill Project, which ran for 2 winters in a row and collected a lot of data on krill abundance and distribution using the echo sounder I've already mentioned. A lot of observation of cetaceans and seabirds to understand their distribution as well. Then we've also had recently running the South Georgia Pelagic Biodiversity Project, which was really aiming to trial a few different methods on how to monitor pelagic biodiversity. So we were deploying things like UVP, which is an underwater video profiler to take images up from 100 meters down. We also deployed Niskin bottles, which collect water samples. And back in the lab, we were filtering those water samples, like eDNA, on filter papers.
I cannot believe the variety of projects that you are involved in. And both of us, we've just come back from 4 days at sea. We've been collecting data along this Eastern Core Box transect that you talked about. Can you talk us through a day-to-day pace of ship-based work?
Yeah, no 2 days on the ship are the same, which is partly why it's so enjoyable. It always feels a little bit hectic to me, but it's very well organised. So depending on daylight, we'll probably start with a deployment at dawn and then we'll head off on a transect with the echo sounder running. So we're taking our acoustic data in, but whilst we're doing that, we're also on the bridge looking for cetaceans. So we note down every whale or groups of fur seals that we see. Those transects, they're about 35 nautical miles long. So they take 4 to 5 hours to complete, depending on the sea state. So in an average day, we'll normally be whale watching for about 8 hours on the bridge. Then there'll be a quick pause for some dinner, maybe, if the crew are lucky to have it coincide with dinner. And then we'll be off on the front deck deploying instruments. So we'll probably do another CTD, maybe deploy the UVP camera that I mentioned. We also have something called a mini bongo net, which takes a pelagic sample from 100 meters. And then, depending on whether we've seen any swarms of krill that look interesting on the echo sounder, we might do a target trawl, which is a short 15-minute trawl off the back of the boat. And that can, we normally spend our time in the evening analysing that in a small lab space on the boat. The captain of the boat and lots of the crew have been working on this vessel for well over 10 years or even longer in South Georgia waters. So really, it's quite a collaborative process, and I'm often bouncing back and forth with them in terms of what they think is best as well. Of course, we're all very reliant on the weather, which is hard to guarantee for these kind of projects.
The classic polar caveat. So during the Eastern Corvox transect we just discussed, as part of our marine mammal watches, we conducted 4-hour transects across 4 different transects, so a total of 16 hours of watching the sea. How many whales did we see?
We saw 82 whales.
Whoa! Which,
most of which were humpback whales. Some of them were a bit too far away for us to confirm exactly what species they were. But also the nice thing about this trip is that we saw hundreds of fur seals. So we saw 725 Antarctic fur seals, which explains why it's so quiet back at KP right now.
Because they're all at sea.
Because they're all enjoying feeding out at sea at the moment. This survey was pretty good, seeing 82 mostly humpback whales. But then last trip, we saw lots of fin whales. And trips before that, we saw over 100 or 200 humpback whales. So it really is different every single time.
How is it processing a trawl in a moving lab when the ship is rolling?
It's definitely a challenge, especially when we're offshore, and it can be quite rolly on the boat. It's quite a balance between excitement in what I'm seeing, given that variety that we get. It's always a little bit different, so just sort of measuring and identifying what we've got, balanced with attempting not to throw up, to be honest.
Absolutely, good account. But we were lucky that we had beautiful plain sailing on the last one.
Wonderfully calm conditions this last time.
I feel like I haven't got a true representation of what it's actually like. So we talked about the echo sounder, which is called the EK80. Can you talk us about the process of calibrating the instrument? Something I found absolutely fascinating and probably quite surreal to many listeners.
Yeah, it's an acoustic instrument, so it's operating at 2 frequencies, the 38 kilohertz and the 120 kilohertz. And we need to calibrate both of those in order for the instrument to still be effective when we're out at sea. So its main purpose is to be monitoring for krill swarms when we're running those transects on the Eastern Corvox. So to do a calibration, we'll normally position the boat somewhere really still and calm, normally Stromness Bay in South Georgia. And it involves setting up 3 fishing lines. 2 will be fixed completely on the port side and 1 will be on the starboard side of the boat. And we suspend a tungsten sphere directly underneath the EK80 transducer on the bottom of the ship. At this point, someone will run up to the bridge and they can look at the screen, which is receiving the acoustic feedback from the echo sounder. And they'll guide, using radio communication, they'll guide the person on the deck to make incremental movements, which allow you to see that the sphere is being received from set points by the echo sounder. It always makes me think of people who might be eavesdropping on that radio chat, because it sounds very strange asking someone to take 1 step towards the bow, 2 steps back towards the stern, make a small raising of the rod, lower the rod, do a small circle. Yeah.
Perfectly captured. And it's not a short process either, because it literally took us from 8 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. So
it's one of those things you want to take steady and make sure you get it right.
Definitely. So Yeah, Katie, I'm just constantly impressed, really, by the variety of work that this job entails and how many plates you're constantly spinning, as we've discussed, through the variety of different work projects. Can we talk about one of my favourite projects, the bi-weekly observations in the bi-weekly observations for the British Geological Survey?
Yes, so KEP is also a magnetic observatory. So we have a small hut which is set a little way away from the base so that it's not influenced by ferrous metals at the station. And I go there once a fortnight to take readings which monitor the shifting of the magnetic field, essentially. It sounds rather big. So I use a theodolite-type instrument, which is fitted with a magnetometer. And it's basically just a very methodical process of taking readings. And I wish I could explain it properly, but this is one of those things that I've had to learn about since coming to KEP, so I can't really explain the background of it. But it ultimately helps to inform our understanding of the shifting of the magnetic field. And this feeds into things like chart plotting and, yeah, everyday uses of mapping.
It's always a very cold experience as well, because we could be in this hut for an hour to an hour and a half. We're not moving very much and we can't wear anything with a zip or anything that might have any potential metal on it. So we've really just got like base layers and a fleece if we're lucky. But yeah, by the end of it, we're like, whoa, this is cold.
It definitely takes some planning to get the perfect non-magnetic outfit. It's harder than you think.
I love that we're like, okay, look, we're going to change into our magobs, as we call it, magobs outfit. Perfect. So how do you fit lab work in amongst all of these field-based projects when you're back on station?
It can be a bit of a juggling act. Normally I find myself checking the weather a lot. And trying to put lab days on the super snowy, windy days so that we can make the most of the nicer days to get out and about. If we're going to maybe check something at a field site, then we need really nice conditions at the moment because we haven't got a lot of daylight. Or if we're going to be using the boats to look for leopard seals, for example, then we want to make sure we have a nice window for that.
What are you most looking forward to coming up to your second winter?
I think having seen this last year, I'm just looking forward to seeing all of the animals moving through their seasons again. It's a real privilege to have been able to see it once, let alone knowing what's coming and in anticipating seeing it again. So that's definitely high on my list. I'm not quite ready to let go of this team yet, but meeting a whole new team of people will be exciting, and going through the motions with them as well.
Would you like to share with us your long-term aspirations?
It is a privilege to be in remote and relatively pristine places like South Georgia. So ultimately, I'd love to continue being able to monitor unique ecosystems and hopefully being able to contribute information that will help to preserve them for future generations. I'd also quite like to see an emperor penguin. So that's a personal aspiration. So I might need to look into travelling further south at some point.
Katie, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for describing in so much depth all the work and the projects that you're conducting at King Edward Point.
Thank you so much for having me.
So much for the peace and quiet in a vast, deserted landscape. But most people don't have fur seals and penguins as their neighbours and just casually on their doorstep. Katie was awarded a short break between her two seasons and is soon on her way back to South Georgia for her second winter. Good luck, Katie. I don't think there's anyone that currently knows the island as well as you do. If you're the kind of person who thrives on adventure, do check out the job section of the British Antarctic Survey's website, as you never know, you might have the exact skills that bass are looking for. And if you learned something new when listening today, tell us. Make sure you leave a review on the Ice World page or wherever you get your podcasts. The next episode, we will hear from Dutch collaborators who work at Rothera Research Station. We've got a really exciting interview with four different scientists. So make sure to listen to that if you would like to hear more about the beasts that dominate the Antarctic terrestrial ecosystems. Until next time, I'm Nadia Frontier, and thank you very much for listening.